Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 29th of Adar. And today we're going to see a tshuva of Yabi Omer Ved Yosef. This is from the 8th volume of Yabi Omer, the Ebn Ezra section, chapter number, or Sibon, response number 22. It's dated the 29th of Adar of Tavshin Mem Gimel of 1983, and it's the report of an appeal that he had in his role as one of the members of the Chief Rabbinical Court in Yerushalayim, and he's got co-members that he'll mention later. So the question is, there's an appeal of a case. The husband has appealed a case in which, the woman is appealing, the mother is appealing a case in which a local court in Haifa, on the 12th of Elul of Tavshin Membet. Now, I don't usually bring in all the dates that are relevant to a discussion, but I hear I'm doing it because I think it's worth always paying attention to the fact that in court cases like this, there are time lapses, and those time lapses are people's lives that are sort of being put on hold or just being forced into a different path than they had hoped for them to go. So this husband and wife are arguing about this. They're like exes by now, they're divorced, and they're arguing about this topic. And so this appeal that Rav Ovadia Yosef is hearing is from the 29th of Adar, based on a court decision that had come down on the 12th of Elul. So the 12th of Elul is months. It's about six months earlier than this. She had gotten a decision, or the local court had made a decision, that another decision that had been given should not be put into effect. So the original decision that there was going to be put into effect was that the husband had to provide money for the support of their daughter. So, now this appeals court in Haifa, this local court in Haifa, it said, nope, we're not putting that into effect until there's a new court case about this issue, until we get new instructions that we have to put into effect. So here's the case. The couple had gotten married in 1966, so they'd been married for a while, they had a daughter, and then in 1968, and then it's been 10 years, so like 73, so 5 years later, when the little girl was 5 years old, they separated, and then they eventually got divorced. And the woman, throughout this time, has always wanted money for support, and she always wants more money for support. Not always, but she comes periodically for more support, meaning the support that she's gotten is insufficient, and she wants more support for her daughter. And she always did got it, and she always won, except that every time they'd come in, or periodically when they would come in, the husband would say, you know, it's not fair because they're not letting me see my daughter. And there would be a lot of court decisions saying the woman has to give him opportunities to see the daughter. It doesn't happen. So finally, the court called in the young, by now she's a young woman, she's a teenager. So on the 4th of Kislev of Tavshin Membet, the 7th of Kislev of Tavshin Membet, so in between the case, in between the time when the Haifa court said they weren't going to make him pay any more support until something changes, and now when Rav Yosef is dealing with it, she came into court and she said in front of a Beit Din, in front of a rabbinical court, I don't want to meet my father. Right? It's all this time he's not been interested in having anything to do with me, and he didn't care about me, so I don't want anything to do with him, and I don't want to speak with him, and I want him to respect my wishes. And my mother also doesn't want me that I should meet with him, and I'm old enough that I can make my own decisions, I don't need my father anymore, and that's what she said. So it's part of the tragedy here is to notice is that the father, she seems to assume the father wasn't interested in her, even though he apparently was paying at least something all these years and was looking for opportunities to see her, and the mother has succeeded in convincing her that it's not true. So that's a kind of a tragedy that happens, unfortunately, in some especially bitter divorces. It's a tragic thing that comes into play, right? She's gotten this wrong impression of her father. It seems like from the case, this wrong impression from her father, because her mother has put roadblocks in front of the father seeing the daughter. The daughter gets the impression, and the mother supports that impression, that the father's not interested in her, and that the father's not paying for any of her support. You know, apparently he is paying something, or he's paying what the court's been telling him all along. So now she's saying, I don't want anything to do with her. So the question is, does he have to keep paying? So the court checked the facts, and it turns out the husband has tried many times. Then the woman and the daughter have both refused for a long time to let him see her, and therefore it gave a psak. Now here it says, Yudalef Iyar Tavshin Membet, but that can't be right because it's before these events happened. So they said that whenever it happened, the Haifa court said, you know, until such time as the daughter is willing to meet with him, then we're going to suspend his requirement to pay support for her, because maybe she'll change her mind, maybe she'll be willing to meet with him. And then on the 12th of Elul, of Tafshin Mem Bet, when they saw that she's staying there. So you know what? It could be that the other one was the mistake, that when she came to court, it was before that. In any case, there was a decision that we were going to suspend it. She didn't come. She didn't change her mind. So they said, okay, so then he doesn't have to pay until something meaningfully changes. So that's the question that's coming before Rav Yosef. She, the mother, and the daughter want him to have to pay, and it doesn't matter. They think it doesn't matter that he doesn't get to see her, and he says, I should be allowed to see her. So it happens to be that the background to this whole halakhic question is a place where the Gemara is very much out of touch with our current assumptions about how parents are supposed to deal with their children in the general case. When things come up. So that, and that will be a background to this whole discussion the Rav Yosef is going to have to deal with. In the Gemara's time, and this is the Rambam passing this way as well, that that the obligation of the father, the full obligation of the father to support children, is only until the age of six. But once they get to be the age of six, the theory is, and how that worked in the time of the Gemara is unclear to me, but the theory was that the kids could maybe beg on their own, they could be off on their own, and the father either A, felt that he'd want to, or felt there was no way for him to do it, then he didn't have to support his children. So that's not something we paskin today. We have lots of reasons today why we think the parents, why we halakhically rule that parents are required to do more for their children than just support them until the age of six, but it affects our conversation. So that was just background we needed to know. The Rambam in the Laws of Ishus writes that you don't separate a boy from his mother until the age of six, right? Because until then he sort of needs her and he needs to be supported by her. He needs her emotional support. He needs to grow up with her. And in that time, even if the parents are separated and the boy is staying with the mother, you would obligate the father to pay support even though the boy is with the mother. But after six, the father has the right to say, if the son comes to live with me, then I'll pay for him. And if not, then I won't. That's not the halacha as we follow it today, but that's the way the Rambam passes the halacha. When it comes to a daughter, it's not the same. The daughter is supposed to grow up with her mother even after she's six. And then the father, so in the Rambam's talk, the question would be, if the father has enough money to that he would give tzedakah ordinarily, he would give charity to people. So then we take from the father, against his will, charity dollars, right? We can, you know, let's say the father makes, $100,000 a year. And that would mean that at least he would give $10,000 a year to tzedakah. So that $10,000, unless he wants to support his daughter from other money that he has, that would go to support this daughter. So you tzedakah money from the father to support the daughter. But that means then it's not a straight up obligation of his, because we're using his tzedakah funds, not his regular funds. So that's what we would do. And that would be true, the Rambam says, even if, the Rambam says in the Torah and Shulchan Aruch Paskin that way, that would be true, even if the mother marries somebody else, right? The alimony or the child support basically would continue even if the mother marries another man. The Ravid there discussing this Rambam says, Eina da'at sovelet lachuf ulhafrid b'neu mimenu sharehu chayav lechancho latorah ben arba v'chamesh. The Ravid seems to claim and that the first part of the Rambam's psak, where the Rambam said that until the age of six, the boy stays with the mother, and the father has to pay child support anyway, even though the boy is not with him. The Ravid says, understand, he has to teach the boy Torah. How can he educate him in Torah? He just says, how can he educate him? V'hu gadel ben ha-nashim, when he's growing up among women. So the Magid Mishnah, which is a commentary on the Ravid, says, I don't know what he means, the Ravid. I don't know what the Ravid means by an obligation to teach him Torah, to train him in Torah, to educate him in Torah from the age of four or five, because the halacha in the Gemara is, in Bava Batra, that you don't bring him to school, you're not required to bring him to school anyway, until the age of six. So the Magen Mishnah says maybe the Ravid meant that there's a Gemara in Sukkah that talks about how the progression of education goes, and the Gemara there says, Yodea ledaber aviv melamdo Torah tziva lanu Moshe, that from the moment a child learns how to speak, we're supposed to train them to start saying Torah tziva lanu Moshe, to know that the Torah comes from Moshe at Sinai and all of the faith elements of the Torah, and we start him learning to speak and say these kinds of things. So the Magen Mishnah says maybe that's what the Ravid meant, and the Ravid is saying that if the kids living with his mother, the father doesn't have the ability to do that. So the Magen Mishnah then says that does not seem to him to actually provide a real question on the Rambam. It's not a real claim, because the Rambam could hold that this kind of education, even if the boy is living with the mother, the father could, when he comes to visit him, this son, right? The assumption is that even though the mother is raising him until the age of six, the father could visit him. And the Magen Mishnah says the Rambam must have held that that would be sufficient to train him in those issues. So there's lots of subsidiary issues that are sort of being thrown around here that aren't our direct issue, right? Our direct issue is whether or not we can obligate the father to pay money, if he's to pay support, if he's not being allowed to see the child. But we just had the Magen Mishnah suggesting that there's sort of a disagreement between the Rambam and the Ravid, or a difference of understanding between the Rambam and the Ravid as to, first, the level of education, or the amount of education that a father needs to do for his son before the age of 6. The Rambam seems to imply that there's nothing there, and therefore that the fact that the son is with the mother is not an issue, and that should get in the way of him having to support the son. That's an assumption of the Rambam's. And the Ravid says, not true, because he has to teach him Torah. And the Magen Mishnah doesn't know what he means. And the Magen Mishnah says, well, there are things you teach a kid even before they get to school. It's all those kinds of things. But the Magen Mishnah says, but the Rambam could easily believe that you can do that on occasional visits. So I think all of that those are interesting questions that aren't really our central topic. So I'll leave them. But that question of what constitutes preschool education in Torah for Torah purposes that we're required to do, and second, to what extent is one able to do that on visits, or does it require always living together in a framework where it will be possible to do? The Chelkan Mechokek, when he's describing these halachos in the Shulchan Aruch in Pei Bet in Eben Ezer, Sivkat and Tet, says that when we say the father can refuse to pay support if the son is over 6 and is not with him, it means when the son chooses to be with his mother, and therefore the father can say, "Ein alai chiyuv tzedakah." I don't have an obligation of tzedakah. Again, to pause to think about an interesting claim, meaning that just because there are people out there with need doesn't mean we always have to get stuck with them. And so the father can say, it's true, this boy doesn't have money right now, but it's not my problem because the boy's not willing to come live with me where I could teach him Torah. As long as he's not willing to listen to me to learn Torah with me, then, and I have an obligation to be mechanich him, to educate him and all those things, the Torah and other things, if he's not going to live with me, I don't have to be here. I don't have to give him tzedakah. So step one is clearly the assumption that there are times when we're not obligated to give tzedakah to people, even if they might be in need. I think that's an important point that's lost. I think people just see need and assume that we're required to support need, and yet it turns out that no, there are times when it's not true, when there might be need, and yet we're not required to. The Rabbi Yosef is quoting this, though, to make the point that it sounds like his obligation in Mizonot from the time the child is 6 is only mitorat tzedakah, and it's a choice of how to spend his tzedakah dollars. So if that were true, he says, today, though, we have an ordinance by the Rabbanut HaRashit, the chief rabbin of the state of Israel, from Tufshin Dalet, from 1944, which said that a father is required to support his children until they're 15. Right, and I think I saw many years ago a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein's where he said he thinks today it's all the way, I think, through the end of college, he said. So that would be always an interesting question, meaning there's a sense that for whatever the Gemara said about it, that as society changes, the obligation of a parent to support their child changes as well and grows with what is ordinarily common in society. So based on that, then, it means that the father can't say, well, I don't have to get stuck at him anymore because we now have a chief rabbinate requirement that he pays until the child is 15. Now, I'll remember the daughter. We haven't gotten back to this daughter in a while, but the daughter is already 15. So that would be an interesting question, because it seems like he would no longer have that obligation anymore. So then he says, if it's just a question of a takana, of a rule they made, then it seems not to be an issue like that anymore. But if you look at the wording of the rule that they made, of this takana, this ordinance that they created, the rule is, lefanim b'Yisrael, it's been an ancient custom in the Jewish people, that even though me'ikar hadin, even though the strict law, right, the by-the-books law, is that you don't obligate somebody to support their children beyond the age of 6, mikol makom hayu machlimim umachrizim alav la'richol ezunam ad shigadlo. They would always, meaning this chief rabbinate's ordinance and ruling said, it's never been true, or it's been a long time since it's been true, that it was really just their free choice as to whether to support their children, because if somebody refused to support their children, what they would do is they would embarrass them in public. They would announce their refusal, and they would bring to bear all this moral pressure to support the child, and the child is considered an adult in whatever society it is. So that's the way that you leads into it. And it's a reminder of a few things. But one thing it's a reminder of is that it's not always true the solutions to problems resides in law. So the chief rabbinate is saying there was hundreds of years of the Jewish people where this was an issue. Theoretically, the father didn't have to support after the age of six. You didn't want that to be the halacha. It was never supposed to be the halacha. You didn't want that to be meaning the practice. And so whenever they had a man who said, I'm not supporting my kids, so you would embarrass them till they did support the kids. So it wasn't, you didn't take them to court, right? Very often people think the solution always should be, there should be a law and a rule, and you take them to court. But here is an example that you have in it saying that it's not true, that there are problems, and this would be one of them, which are solved by moral suasion rather than law. Then when they want to say that it's no longer good enough, they're trying now to explain why they're making a rule. If that's true, just leave it like that. So he says, Ach bizmanenu lo ichshar dara. Our generation isn't as good as it should be. It's a bad thing. The generation requires more law. What's supposed to happen in a generation, the chief rabbinate was saying, was that there's laws, and then there's modes of conduct that everybody knows what is a person is supposed to do, and they would follow the modes of conduct they're supposed to do. So nowadays, kfiya musarit ein kocha yafa. And we no longer have the power. It doesn't work, right? The fact that people say you're a disgusting person doesn't bother people anymore, and that's a problem. So because of that, and we have situations where fathers refuse to support their children just because they're insensitive and have a bad heart, and the courts don't have, and then the district courts, the government courts are freeing them from their obligations of kids who are over six, and they say the law doesn't can't think about the fact that the father should be giving tzedaka to this child. And the truth is that even after 15, a lot of parents support their children, and therefore they made a takana, they made a ruling, and that takana, then he says, so Avad Yosef Nesedev, when you read it, the takana wasn't coming to uproot the issue of giving tzedaka for those who are doing it of their own free will. It sounds like supporting a child beyond the age of six sort of counts as tzedaka. That can come up, not here, but it can come up in other places for questions like, does it count as your ma'asik suffering? If you only have limited funds, does it count as your tithe, as your tenth of your income that ideally Jews customarily give to tzedakah? So that would be relevant to this as well. In any case, it seems like it's not a question of getting rid of that idea. It's that when you have people who are refusing to do it and they're leaving their kids, you know, naked and hungry and unable to support themselves, so we had another way to get them to do it. And therefore, in our times, Rabbi Yosef says, if the child has means of support, then maybe you don't require the father. It would seem you don't require the father to support the child, as the Torah Shulchan Aruch says it, and as the Shulchan Aruch himself paskens. So that's a psak by Rav Yehudaya and Rav Yaakov Adas, Rav Shalom Yosef Shalom Yoshiv, and Rav Ovadia Yosef. So that would seem to. So we'll get back to this in a second. He says though, Rav Uziel seems to see it differently. He said that when it comes to a daughter who's now 14, he agrees with Rav Herzog, Rav Uziel Herzog, that according to the rabbinate's decision, the father should still pay her mizonot, and it's not just staka, it's an obligation of the father. So that would mean that even if the child has nechasim, has property, has things of their own to support themselves, the father would still be required to do it. And Rav Yosef says in Yechavadat, I discussed that whole question about my suksafim, as I mentioned before, whether you can take it for the mizonot and all these kinds of questions. But that now comes back to our daughter in our court case. If she is rebellious in the sense that she's not willing to meet up with her father and she doesn't want to talk to him even, and she degrades him and disgraces him, so therefore he doesn't have to pay her mizonot. I think his point is that he thinks since it's got a tzedakah connection and the chief rabbinate's ordinance didn't uproot that tzedakah connection, it just made it stronger. But in tzedakah connections too, you don't have to get stuck with somebody who's not willing to deal with you and not willing to be treated by it, to discuss anything with you and talk to you, like we had with the son who wasn't willing to be educated by the father, so then you don't have to. So therefore, he thinks probably you don't have to. And then he says, you know, might even connect it to another machloket, which I thought was an interesting machloket for us to think about as well, which is that in the 1400s, 1500s, the 1500s, the Mahari Ben Lev held that if the daughter's living with the mother, so let's remember, right, the traditional custody arrangements then theoretically would be, if sadly couples divorce and you have to split up and you have to give the children to one or the other parent, you'd give the daughters to the mother because the daughters have to learn how to be good Jewish women, and you give the sons to the father because the sons have to learn how to be Jewish men, including the obligation to learn Torah, and then maybe you split up a family or whatever. So how that works is a whole discussion of its own. But the Mariben Leib says that even if the mother takes the daughter to a different city, she moves away. So now, especially in their time, but even in our times, it becomes much harder for the father to meet up with the daughter. Nonetheless, the father still has to pay child support. So if that's true, you could say in our situation as well, maybe. Maybe you could say the Mariben Leib would have held that in our situation as well, even though the father doesn't get to see the daughter, that he still has to pay the child support. Because it's no different fundamentally, maybe, than if they had moved away. I'm not sure that's true. We'll come back to it. But that's one option. And then the other option is, Aval Maharshtam says, that just like when a son is under six, the mother can't move the kid out of the city, though then because the son has to learn Torah from the father. It's true of a daughter as well. That's what Maharshtam held. Maharshtam held that the daughter has to be available to the father as well. And therefore, he wouldn't have to pay support if they move her away anyway. So you say, maybe, or how do you know that she can't? So the Barashtam says, because, you know, what if the father connected to his child, loves the child very much, you know, like basically kill the man by taking his children away from him? He says, Zehu davar she'in hadatso valto b'li safek. It's just clear and obvious. Now, always, I think, whenever you hear somebody say something's clear and obvious, you have to worry about it and think about it, because what's clear and obvious to me and you is not always clear and obvious to other people. So, in any case, Maharashtam says, I'll bring a raya in any case from the Ravid, who said, how could it be that the birth son is living with the mother, and then he has to teach him Torah? And the Ravid Magid said, he can teach him even though he's visiting, but that's only true if he's got the ability to visit, right? That's when the mother's in the city, but if she's going to move away, then the Ravid's point is correct. And therefore, the Maharashtam held that you can't move the child away to another city, the son, and he thinks it applies to the daughter as well, because I think he thinks that there are ways in which the father has to teach the daughter stuff as well, and there's a tshuva of the Ramban, that the reason the daughter lives with the mother is so the mother can teach her how to be a fine Jewish woman, whatever the standards of fine Jewish women are. So, but if the mother's not doing that, the father should be able to be there and intervene and argue that it's not true, just like the other way around. The mother should be able to intervene if the father's doing things wrong. However that works, that's not brought up here. That's not our issue here. So in this case, when you have a daughter who's refusing to meet with the father can say, I'm not giving it. That would be the Maharashtam's way of seeing it. And the Radvaz and Tshuva, in a response, agrees with the Maharashtam that the mother can't move a daughter even to another city. And then Rav Ovadia Yosef says, and I saw a tshuva of Rav Shalom Mesas in Shut Divrei Shalom, which is like the grandfather of the Rav Mesas, who was in the 20th century, an older contemporary of Ovadia Yosef, who was the Rav Rashi and the Rav of Beis Din of Yerushalayim, an older contemporary, right, a senior contemporary of Ovadia Yosef, who brought the opinion of the rabbis of Fez, who all agree that even if she already took the daughter to another city, we force her to come back. So Rav Mesa says, I'm not sure the rabbis of Fez knew the psak of Maharam di Buton, which seems to be disagree with them, because how would they have argued with him without when he was many years before them, and they didn't bring any proof to it. So he says it's because the printing presses weren't working so well, and they didn't have the books yet. But now I have the Sefer of the Maharam di Buton, so I'm going to follow his words, and I'm going to look up what he has to say, and therefore say that you can move him. And that's and also the Bar Yibin Leiv, the same thing, who said you can, at least b'dieved, move the child to another city. And he thinks that it's a Shev Valtas, it's better, you know, a lot of times, it's better not to interfere. Because if you interfere, you might do the wrong thing. But here, you just leave things where they are, and therefore, he thinks you'd leave it, and you'd allow her to stay. So Rav Yosef now, right? So l'fi ani yadati, imin b'adin l'achriya. But we can't force the father to pay money, right? It might be, you're right. Theoretically, you could tell me that if she's already in another city, we're not going to force her to come back, maybe. But now to force the father to pay to support it, that's also like a Shevatas. I think that he can say, there. He can also say, but I follow the opinion. We have a concept of called the Kimli, that I'm allowed to follow certain opinions. Kimli means that if, you know, there's a machloket among authorities, and even if the general practice in Torah is to follow one set of authorities, a particular litigant can say, but these are also good authorities, and I follow these other good authorities who are authorities as well. So that idea of Kimli would mean, how can we take the money from the father when he can say, I follow those authorities, say she didn't have the right to take my child away from me into another city. So therefore, it seems clear, so I'm sorry, I think I got lost, but I think this is the words of Rav Mesa. So therefore, it seems clear, he says, that you're not going to obligate the father to pay support, and so all the more so in our case, says Rav Yosef, now I'm sure it's Rav Yosef, when the daughter says she hates the father, and she's not willing to meet with him, she's not willing to do anything with him, so then she has to live with her choices, and therefore he agrees with the court in Haifa that the mother's appeal is denied until such time He says not only the court said we're gonna not fulfill it until we get new instructions, but he says Rav Yosef, I think it's better to say that there's no more psak din. The father is not obligated to support unless and until such time as the daughter is willing to agree with him. Now, I think there's something that's not addressed here is that theoretically the father might have actually done something. So if the daughter comes into court and it gives reasons why she doesn't want to see her father and they're actual reasons, so I think that would be a different case. I think here the case is clearly that the mother has kept the daughter from the father and also seems to have fed her misinformation. So the daughter thinks the father has not been involved and has not cared about the daughter in that situation. But nonetheless, the daughter has to open up and realize that, no, the court is telling her, father wants to see you. He thinks he wants to have a relationship with you. You have a choice. Either you don't take his money or you have to open up the possibility of trying to revisit that relationship to see if you can put it back together. And she really has to do that if she's going to get support from him. And therefore, that's what Rav Yosef says, and he paskins that along with Rav the Tzitz Eliezer. So beforehand, he said he had a psak with Rav Yodaya and Rav Yosef, Rav Adas. Here he says he's joining the psak din of the Tzitz Eliezer and of Rav Kulitz. So I'm not sure exactly how these courts work. But in any case, on the 29th of Adar of 1983, this is the psak they gave that made clear that fathers are supposed to support their children, whether it's a matter of tzedakah, of charity, or a matter of other things. But they are supposed to support their children. But that's only if the child is willing to have a relationship with them. If a child decides to completely ignore and not have anything to do with the father, that's not the obligation of the father anymore, and the child will be on their own. Responsibility for the 29th of Adar of Tavshin Mem Gimel 1983. Have a great day.